Stu Jackson, as promised, joins us now on Brady and Price, analyst, NBA TV, former NBA coach, GM, former executive vice president of the NBA. Good morning, Stu.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Doing all right. Better than Nick Nurse was doing after the last game. He was beside himself. Well, of course, he coached the game without Lowry and Siakam and Fred VanVleet and Jonas Valanciunas, and that meant that his best player had to have the ball more often and score more often, and he was kind of jostled, according to Nick Nurse, more often and didn't get the calls. Does he have a legitimate argument on this, or is this something that every coach would have a legitimate argument on at this point?
Yeah, well, it's interesting, and, you know, in that he felt Kawhi Leonard, whose usage rate during the game was very high, only to, have four free throws. And, I get the logic. At the same time, I think within a game, the referees, we all know how difficult a job it is. I happened to watch the game. I didn't think there was anything that was extraordinary in terms of the physicality of the game. So I get his point, but, it's and I get the willingness and wantingness to defend his player. But that game's behind and it's time to move on.
Okay, let me ask you this question. Does this have any effect on Kawhi and how he's treated going forward by the referees?
No, I don't think so. I mean, listen, Kawhi is a great player. He's one of the top players in the NBA. And every game is a little bit different. The thing you get is a different officiating crew every night in the NBA. And I don't think it's going to affect him from one game to another. And the Raptors, Kawhi, have to take each game, by itself. The key is, I find in officiating that the aggressor of the two teams generally is going to get the most calls. For obvious reasons, and that needs to be the focus of the Raptors and Kawhi.
Stu Jackson, our guest, 835 on Brady and Price. His lack of, how would I put it, vocalization on court, is that a factor? We know that players push for calls. Kyle Lowry's still does it here. DeMar DeRozan finished third, fifth, and tenths to in free throws attempted the last 3 years he was here. Kawhi's not a guy that's gonna go at the officials and have a running dialogue with them over a 48-minute game, is he?
No, he's not. And, you bring up a good point, but it kind of cuts both ways, guys, in that when you get a player that complains too much or is overly demonstrative, it can work against them on things like 50-50 calls during a game, that perhaps a complainer or the squeaky wheel doesn't get the benefit of the doubt the way someone is who approaches referees in a respectful manner and, or doesn't say anything. So it can cut both ways. I don't think it's a huge factor in terms of, quote-unquote, getting calls.
For someone who doesn't terribly, and I am this person, terribly believe in the Sixers as a playoff entity this year, even with the ad of Jimmy Butler, it's a perfect morning to talk to you. They were humiliated by San Antonio last night. Joel Embiid shot 6 of 17, 0 for 6 from outside. I like Jimmy Butler a lot, but he took 13 shots, had 6 points. He didn't get to the line once. Embiid leads the league in free throws attempted. He only got to the line once. I don't know. It's not going well for this stretch for Philadelphia. They lost home games to Brooklyn and Indiana. Do you see them as a team that's on the level of Boston, Milwaukee, Toronto, even Indiana come April?
I've said this for a month since the Jimmy Butler trade. I do not feel that they're in that class, and my reasons are the following. I think by making the trade and, giving away two starters in Covington and Saric, away, I think really compromised the depth of their team. I think even before the trade, I never felt the Philadelphia 76ers were a great perimeter shooting team. And now I think that that's come to fruition. They've helped themselves on the offensive end with Jimmy Butler because it's given them, another superstar and a guy, more importantly, that can really close out games. And he's done that. I think he's won two games for them in the last second. But I just don't think the roster is deep enough. I don't think they shoot the ball well from the perimeter enough. I'm not sure that the skill level really meshes with a guy like, you know, Ben Simmons, who I really feel coming back this year hasn't improved his game or his skill level in a way that I would hope, but he's always going to be a successful player because of he's so physically dominating, but that doesn't all necessarily translate in the type of elite team that on both sides of the ball, offensively, the way the Raptors are, the Bucks are, the Celtics, and even the Pacers.
With NBA TV analyst Stu Jackson, I found it interesting. I got to watch the Golden State-Toronto game in the United States. It was a completely different perspective than watching it here. And the love that flowed for this edition of the Raptors was unbelievable before, during, and after. We've seen the Raptors, when healthy, be as good as any team in the NBA. They do struggle with the threes. Is that a concern? I mean, if you're going to win a championship, do they have to improve that? And can they do it internally?
Well, I think that they can. You know, as you look at the Raptors, I think they have enough perimeter shooting. Is it elite, pure perimeter shooting? No. But on nights when Ibaka's making his three, Lowry has it rolling, guys like Kawhi, they are a very lethal offensive team. I mean, guys, listen, they're the second best offensive team in the NBA, three-point shot or not. It's interesting. I did a podcast just recently, and, you know, the three-point shot is not the end-all, be-all. What really matters is taking more shots than your opponent, shooting a higher percentage than your opponent, winning the assist and turnover level for your opponent. That is what compromises winning games in the NBA, unlike the belief that the three-point shot is really the end-all, be-all to winning. It's not. And the Raptors, you know, are a very well-balanced team. They've got a very deep bench, a deep roster. They can beat you in a variety of different ways. And at the end of the day, I think that that will prevail. You're going to have nights where you don't shoot the three ball really well, and you still have to find a way to win games. And that holds true for everyone. And I think the Raptors are capable of doing that. Themselves.
Yeah, there's four teams in the top 10 right now in three-point percentage who are under 500, including the 7-23 Cavaliers. So you're right. It's not a magic elixir for everybody in the least. Can you figure out, and I know we always say things in sports. I've never seen this before, but 30 games into a season, I have never seen this before. The 14 of 15 Western Conference teams all separated by 7 games. There's teams we gifted playoff spots to in Utah, probably New Orleans, certainly Houston right now, and they're below that 8-seed waterline. Why is there such parity among not 7 or 8, but 14 teams?
Yeah, you know, I think it just speaks to the overall strength of the conference. And as you're talking about the teams that surprisingly are out of the playoffs, how about the teams that are in? When you talk about the Clippers, Dallas, and Memphis, mm-hmm. I don't think any of us at the beginning of the season would have put them, in the mix as potentially a playoff team. But here they are in the mix. But it's early. I hate to sound cliche-ish, but it's only 30 games. The fact that they're all bunched together, I think it's going to mean it's going to be a competitive ride in the Western Conference from here on out. But as you look at those teams, the elite teams in the Western Conference that I don't think we have to be concerned with are the Nuggets, the Warriors, and Oklahoma City. You look at those three teams and, you know, it's comparable to the rest, and there's just a level of separation. And lastly, the biggest surprise to me, it's like, hey guys, never doubt LeBron James. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the Los Angeles Lakers and what he's doing with this basketball team, I think is one of the storylines going into the rest of the year. We've seen it before in Cleveland, where he's taken a group of young players, neophytes, if you will, and improved them as the year has gone on. And here they are, not only in the playoffs, but sitting with home court advantage. I just think it's amazing.
And there's still guys struggling. Ingram in his third season, Ball in his second season. There haven't been massive steps forward. I'm not saying there won't be, but there haven't been in 30 games so far. On the Brian Windhorst article last week, I'm curious your read on what he wrote about the Clippers courting, almost like a college recruit, both Kevin Durant and Kawhi Leonard. You know the Clippers have always been the little brother, and outside of that year or two window with Kobe retiring or not being very good or being very injured, with Blake and Chris Paul, the Clippers have never really been able to run that town. How in can Steve Ballmer get with Jerry West helping him, which I think is big? How big can they get if Kawhi and Kevin Durant can be enticed to become Clippers?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, that goes without saying. They're going to be great. And I think the biggest thing the Clippers have going for them right now is LeBron being the repellent. LeBron, the Lakers are LeBron. LeBron are the Lakers. So if you're a guy like Kawhi or Kevin Durant, perhaps they're of the mindset that if they intend to actually, you know, exercise free agency and go to the Clippers, which I am not convinced is really going to happen. I mean, only time will tell. They may be of the mindset that they want their own team or they want to form their own duo. I mean, who's to know? But, you know, whether or not they move remains to be seen if they're actually in very similar situations. Let's say, you know, Golden State and Toronto end up in the finals. So as a player, do you still make the decision to leave a finals-level team with one of them winning a championship and now go away in free agency to the Clippers in the off chance that you get to the finals? I don't know. It doesn't make a lot of sense. We've seen it before. I get that. But, you know, winning cures a lot in the minds of a lot of players.